Penny! Penny! Penny!
I'm ready!
Book smash!
But Arbiter friend?
Am I not the captain of this ship?
You're a wizard, Harry.
Shadow Clone Jutsu!
Mr. Messenger.
And the Billboard Music Award goes to...
Pikachu!
BTS!
Winter is coming.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Bye-bye!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Let's Talk Fandoms, a podcast where we talk about all things fandom. I'm your host, Tazita Gant, and a while back, I got the chance to talk with a best-selling author about her newest romance novel, Building on Broken Dreams, book 3 in the Brothers-in-Law series. Not only is she representing Muslim authors within her genre, she has been sticking to her guns about creating passionate, dynamic, and sexual characters. After getting the chance to know more about her book, The Groom, When a Boy Next Door Becomes a Whole Man, part of the Ramadan Night series, I was astounded by how much she informed me about Muslim writing, authors, and creators. With her ever-expanding list of published work, I am very excited to introduce to you all Lindell Williams.
Hi, Tazita. How are you doing? Hello, everyone. I love fandom. I think it's just it's incredible. Just the community and just the creativity is just amazing. So I am fangirling myself a little bit here.
When Lindell and I first met, we went on this almost hour-long tangent about Avatar: The Last Airbender, and it literally, it was the best thing ever. It was so amazing and so much fun to have someone just as passionate about it with me to talk to about. Oh, so great.
You know, it's so funny because Avatar was something that I got into it because of my kids. You know, I was a mom running around and then I just started watching it more and more and more. And the next thing I knew, I was watching it by myself.
Yes.
Again. It's an amazing series. They did that to me with Attack on Titan, too.
Yes.
They sucked me.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And everyone seems to think that it's a little strange that a 50-year-old Muslim woman is so into manga and anime. But I totally am. I totally am.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you be? It's great content.
Yeah. The creators really push they push the envelope, which is something that I do. Maybe that's the reason why I get into it so much, because there is an expanse of different styles and also just really content. And some of it is just like, wow. Oh, woo, okay. They were there with that. You know, just even like when you take something like Attack on Titan, with just the whole idea of using something as in your face as cannibalism, okay, as a backdrop to political intrigue, and just it's just amazing. You know, I really got into that series a whole lot.
Absolutely fantastic. I would love to know, what was your first introduction or experience into fandoms or fandom culture?
My first introduction into fandom was my daughter. Okay. She's a graphic artist and she was really into, I'm trying to remember, Vocaloids and like Merle and stuff. Yeah. She was into that. Then she started getting into manga and anime. And so then I just was like, you know, I was just around looking at her work, looking at what she was doing. She did a lot of OCP.
Oh, OTPs?
OTP. Yeah. Yes. OTP. Like she drew a lot of those and everything like that. And then my son, he's into anime. And so then, a professor at Rockland College, Shamika Mitchell, amazing woman. She invited me to Comic-Con to talk about, from a cultural aspect, because I'm a cultural critic, about Muslim fandom and Muslim creatives, because I'd spent years talking to Muslim creatives across different creative venues, artists, spoken word artists, authors, graphic designers, and I met the most incredible group of cosplayers. And my daughter was a cosplayer too. Her and her father, they used to go to Comic-Con every year. Comic-Con in New York at Jacob Javits. That was their thing that they did together. My husband and my daughter. And they would always come back with stuff and everything. And so then one year she asked me, and I was like, okay, I know about this much, but I think it's really cool and awesome. And I know that it's coming out, like, because Muslim creators came out with comics and anime at all different kinds of levels. And that just meant this amazing group of cosplayers. And it was just like, you know, I still remember running around. I was very disappointed because I got to take a picture with Groot. Okay, love Guardians of And I did not get a chance. Who was it I was looking for? I was looking for, oh my God, Ryan Reynolds plays him. The black and red.
I know who you're talking about.
Deadpool.
Oh, that's not at all who I was thinking.
Running around looking for Deadpool like a nut, because there were a whole bunch that year. There were a whole bunch of Deadpool. Everybody and their mama was being Deadpool.
Yeah.
But there was one cosplayer, like, he was just like amazing. He was doing the acrobatics and everything. And he was just like amazing. And he disappeared on me.
Oh, God.
And I was like, okay, fine. Because I had to go in to talk. All right. I had to go into the session. I was part of a panel.
Yeah.
And so then by the time I got out, I also got to take a picture of a cosplayer dressed like Freddie Mercury, which I thought was really cool. I was just like amazed at these cosplayers. I love it. I could never do it, but I just love Same. Looking at creativity. And so at the end, when we're leaving Jacob Javits and everyone's worn out, you see him just trot. I saw him just trot. My daughter was like, I found Deadpool for you.
Oh, no.
I was like, are you for real? And we were racing, and he was just trudging. And I was just like, oh, I'm not going to bother you because you have to be exhausted. He was like, no, I'll take a picture with you. And he was nice enough to take a picture.
Oh, so, yay.
Really nice. Yeah, that is exactly what got me into all of it.
Oh, wow.
All of it. My kids. And I just think that there's so many levels to it. It's social commentary, you know, so as an author, I really appreciate that. And it's just so much creativity that it's just amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. How would you define the term fandom if you were telling someone who maybe never had heard fandom before?
I see fandom as an appreciation for the artistry of creators and embracing it. Fandom, the people of fandom, they embrace the creativity. They embrace the social commentary that's involved as well. And they show their appreciation and their love for it by becoming creative themselves, you know, and taking it and making it their own in a lot of ways. You know, one of the things that I always find disturbing is, you know, my daughter got me into TikTok too. That's what happens when you.
Oh, you're a TikTok mom.
I'm a TikTok mom, okay? And I'm part of the 40 and up crew. And so I, of course, you know, that was one of the reasons, one of the things I went to first in TikTok. It was manga, anime, cosplayers, had to see them.
Yes.
And this whole idea of POC cosplayers, Black Indigenous POC cosplayers, getting the hate, like, it's like ridiculous. This whole idea, oh well, this character's hentai is not black and everything. like, are you kidding me? You're talking about characters, and it's just like, are you for real right now? No, yeah, not white either. So what's the point you're trying to make? And if the creatives are loving it, why in the world are you hating on it? And it was just like the whole thing, well, they're going to be black today. I loved it.
I love it. I love it so much.
They're going to be black today. Because, you know, creatives, they create these things for you to embrace them.
Yep.
And so there, you know, with the exception of a few that probably may feel this way, mm-hmm. you know, I think what I've gleaned is that the majority of creators are sharing their work with the world, which takes a lot of guts, by the way, but they're sharing their work with the world the world, not to a group of people depending on what they look like or anything like that.
Right.
They're sharing it to the world, sharing these characters to the world. And so if the people of fandom are and the cosplayers and the people that do all the like the OTPs and everything like that, fan fiction. If they want to make it their own, it's just like, you know, as a creative, you know, yeah, that's what you want because you want the world to embrace and love what it is that you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of times, for centuries, actually, Black authors have been derided, and they still are. They're constantly derided for different aspects because when they write, they're writing to their culture and in a way so that they can connect to the people of that culture primarily. And so the writing is very often very, very different than the that of the dominant culture. And so it's derided. So what Black authors have done is they've created their own niches. Okay. So you have, that's when you have something like urban fiction. Okay. Where it's something that became that Donald Goins and, you know, books like Horse Son and everything like that, which was very much speaking to the culture. And so it was something that was derided, but they made it their own and they became independent and they created it and it became a money-making thing. And that's when big publishers started to become interested in it. But it was something that it speaks to the culture. Urban fiction is a very specific thing. And there are the writing is very, very specific. That's happening in romance too, where Black romance authors are creating these books, okay, for primarily Black readers, but you know, anybody can read them, you know? So it's not like just for Black readers, anyone can read them. So you have like subgenres like BWWM, Black women, white men, the new one that's coming out, it's been a few years now, but it's really hitting the scene, which is AMBW or BWAM, Black woman, Asian man. Okay, so these books are starting to make money. And so then you see that, you know, these are Black, mainly Black women authors who are writing Black female characters because of the lack of representation and because of the derision of Black femininity. And because that in romance for decades upon decades, Black female characters were always side characters. They were seen as, you know, either the oversexed character, or they're seen as the mammy. Okay.
Yeah.
And so here are Black authors who are creating Black female characters for Black women readers primarily so that they can see themselves. And that's one of the reasons why I write them. All of my female characters are Black, specifically African-American. The men can be a whole bunch of different things, but specifically African-American, because I wanted to write Black women being loved and cherished and things about them being loved and cherished. And so now what you have, it, just like with urban fiction, you have white authors who are kind of creeping their way in and they won't show their faces. They never show their faces or anything like that because there are many readers who are like, you know, I'm not saying you can't write Black characters, but I don't want to read it from someone that's not Black. You know, I can't say, you know, I write Asian characters. I don't speak to Asian culture because that's not my culture, you know? So I'm definitely always looking for Asian romance writers who are writing those things. So it's like Courtney Milan. So it's just like, you know, you're always on the lookout for that thing because you want the writing to be something from someone from that perspective, speaking about that perspective to the people of that perspective, and you get to enjoy that. But you have a lot of writers who kind of are creeping in, they won't show themselves, but you can always tell that it's not because the stereotypes just come pouring
in. Yes. You know,
the stereotypes just come pouring. And I'm like, oh, yeah. That's not Black. Yeah. Is she black? Really? Is she cooning like that for real? So it's just so that's the thing that needs to be appreciated. If you know you have indigenous creatives, okay, and they're creating these cultural productions, we need to appreciate them and we need to respect them because they're pushback against something that has been impressed upon all of us. And we need to see ourselves and we need to see each other and we need to appreciate that.
When did you start noticing your want and passion to start writing?
I've been writing. Well, I before I became an author, I was a writer. So I taught writing in okay. higher education for 6 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
before I became an adjunct. And then I started contributing to online publications as a writer, okay. journal pieces, op-ed pieces, things like that. I still do that. And then I while I was in college for my master's work, I'm a cultural critic. So I have a master's degree in liberal studies and I focus on literature. And so my master's thesis is on Black Muslim authors.
Uh-huh.
And romance authors in particular, Black Muslim romance authors, because very yes. interestingly, when I, you know, first started out, you start your master's work, you think you're going to cover all of this, and it's going narrow. So you always wonder where these people get these titles. That's how they get those titles. Because like, you got narrow it down, and it becomes like this.
The most niche thing.
But you get to focus on, learn about, and become an expert in.
Okay? Exactly.
And to this day, whatever, it's just like, oh, are there any Black authors in this field, in this genre? I get tagged. I'm the one.
I got it. I know who. Right here. Yeah,
Tag Layla. And so I focused on romance. And mm-hmm. I became a romance scholar.
Yep.
I have peer-reviewed articles and I did national presentations on romance and Black romance and Black Muslim romance, mm-hmm. which is very, very phenomenal because they've carved a niche. So that whole idea of Black people in America, Black authors in America carving these niches, Black Muslim authors did the same thing. The yep. reason why I ended up focusing on Black Muslim author romance is because when it comes to romances that center Muslim characters, it's Black Muslims that are doing it. They're the main ones that are doing it.
Yep.
So I ended up focusing on them. And so I just was like, you know, I would really like to write romance. I've always been into romance since I was younger than I should have been. Like 12, 13.
I love it.
But for all those decades, I always saw white women characters, white mm-hmm. female characters, white, long, white, creamy, white, creamy, white. Okay. All the time. And even if the male characters were not white, which I didn't like the treatment of the male characters either. But even if the male characters were not white, the women were white. Okay. So that's why I made my decision that, you know what, I'm going to use Black female characters.
Yeah.
And so, and African-American in particular, I'm just really not completely comfortable with going the route of dipping into the African diaspora. They're my people. I love them, but it's their cultures. And that's not my culture. And so I okay. would support a Black, a Caribbean, a Nigerian, Black British Caribbean, but you know,
okay.
authors who want to write that from yeah. their perspective,
because yeah.
First of all, you'll end up with a much better book.
Yes.
When it's from that perspective. And then it's not like I'm not treading on that, because that's what white authorship has done. White authors feel like they have the right to tread on any culture that they can. It doesn't matter. And then what you end up with is a bunch of stereotypes and work that just reinforces the derision of people of color and hypes up white people. I really think that people of color should create from their perspectives, speak to their culture, and we need to embrace it, support them.
Yeah.
And yeah. Show them love and appreciation for their work, because without it, we're just killing our culture. We're just killing ourselves culturally. Honestly.
I think what's been really nice is during this period of isolation and quarantine, I've gotten the chance to meet a lot of different authors and from ranging of ages. And I think what's been really nice to hear and to see, which you have also kind of shown to me as well, is the importance of knowing what you're talking about and knowing what you are putting out into the world. A big thing that one of the authors that I'll be having later on in the podcast talk about is he really talks about representing his culture in his work, mm-hmm. even though they are fantasy novels and fiction novels, who the characters are from a foundation and a base that he is, you know, overtly aware of and has a lot of his own experiences rooted into it. And I've seen that just across the board from all the different people that I've talked to, and even beyond authors, a lot of just the creators and like videographers are really, really talking about just the, not even the expectation, but the need that there needs to be to express what you know, and to not almost like falsify what you don't know, or to put like a blanket statement on things that you might not fully understand or have experiences in. And I think it's so important to do that and to really, really put out what you know, because it can only make it better, and it can only make what you are putting out there more passionate for other people to be a part of and become a fan of.
Absolutely. I've had white authors contact me for some advice if they were writing black characters. Oh. And it was just one author. She wrote a mystery, Muslim author, white Muslim author.
Okay.
And she wrote this phenomenal, she's writing this phenomenal mystery series. And there are black characters in it. And what she's using this series to do, it's a historical mystery series. And so it's set in, I think, 13th century Egypt.
Ooh.
And so it's a Muslim mystery series, and she's Muslim. And so she really wanted to highlight the anti-blackness that existed back then. And so she wanted to tread very carefully, because she wanted it to be where she showed it, showed the white characters for who they were. So that's what she wanted. She wanted to speak to the way whiteness props up, reinforces racism and anti-blackness, and defends their own privileges. So she wanted to come from that aspect, and the cluelessness, these were her words, and the cluelessness of white women that still exists. These were her words. I worked with her on that. There was another white Muslim author who kind of wanted, she wanted to show anti-Muslim bias and how it's layered with anti-blackness.
Okay.
And so she also wanted to tread very carefully. And so with both of them, you know, one, she, the mystery author, she was very astute, and she really did a really good job. And I just really was kind of like, when it came to the black characters and she wanted to get into their heads, she really needed help, because, you know, some of the things that I read, it was just like, yeah, when you're someone that's subject to racism and anti-blackness from the time you were born, you don't really respond to see people that way.
Right.
If they interpret it as that, that's them. But you don't really respond to see people that way. So there have been times where, you know, I've had to tell one of two or two of them, or even like one author asked me, she said, well, I want to, my character's biracial. They're half black. So I'm reaching out to you to, so that you can read it. And I just was like, but I'm not biracial.
Exactly. Like, but I'm what?
And you have to talk to biracial, you have to talk to biracial people that are half, who are half black. And have what is she? What else is she?
Right. What's the other half?
Talk to someone from that culture, because biracialness is not, is so completely complex. I mean, I have biracial children, but that doesn't mean I know their experiences, their culture, and how it is that they traverse their identities. It's very, very different. So it's just like you have to tread very, very carefully. And you know, at the end of the day, you knowing that you're not going to have a complete work in a way that someone that's from that perspective can do it.
Yeah.
So in my first book, it's an interracial romance, the Asian man and the black woman.
Yes.
And I laid really, really heavily on the African-American woman because that's my cultural perspective.
Yes.
But when it came to the Asian man, you know, I wanted to share a commonality
okay.
that they had when it came to facing layers of racism.
Gotcha.
And so I was treated very, very carefully. I always had people, Asian people, like giving me advice about yep. it. And I stayed at a certain level.
Exactly.
You know? So it's like I showed the microaggressions that Asian people may experience.
Yeah.
Okay. But I didn't delve deeper into that because it's not my perspective to delve deeper into. But I did it to a level where the Black female character could relate to.
Got it.
And, you know, and so, but for the most part, a lot of the book was him responding to what she experienced because gotcha. It was very different. So even though he was a person of color who experienced certain levels of bias, racism, and had stereotypes imprinted on him, the woman that he loved did too.
Yep.
And they were very, very, very different, and some of them came from his cultural perspective, and he experienced some from hers. So that's what I wanted to do, was kind of show that. But I could not. The character Simon does not speak of Asian culture from an Asian cultural perspective to Asian Americans, because that's not what I am.
Right.
You know. So you really have to tread lightly and be very, very careful when it comes
yeah.
to your fellow people of color that you're writing.
That's very interesting. I like hearing that that you are able to kind of give your knowledge to other authors. And I really like hearing that they are reaching out to gain some insight and understanding to a culture and kind of a whole community that they do not firsthand have experience in. And I like knowing that there are authors out there that are doing that, that are doing the work to reach out to others, to make their books mm-hmm. and their novels better and have a lot of more depth and like knowledge and experience in them. I think that's really, really smart. But then again, it also makes me think of like the authors that aren't doing that, right? And like the authors.
More them.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing is like, why is it taboo or odd or putting in extra work to gain more information about these characters that you want to put in your novels? What do you think makes your writing style stand out from other Muslim authors within the same genre?
You mean in the romance genre?
Yeah.
I think because there was one other author, mm-hmm. one other author, her name is Papatia Fazar. She actually was my inspiration because as I was doing all of my research all of those years, there was no sensual or erotic content. When there have been plenty of Muslim authors who have written romance,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
not centering Muslim characters.
Right.
Plenty. There have been plenty of Muslim authors writing romance centering Muslim characters. A few, mostly Black, mostly African-American in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that there's a disconnect. Those authors who write romance, who they don't necessarily connect their Muslimness to it, and they don't use Muslim characters, plenty of sensual scenes. Well-written sensual scenes, and not so well-written sensual scenes, but plenty of them.
Interesting.
The Muslim authors shut the bedroom door and locked it, okay? And it just was like, even to the point, it got to the point where what was considered erotica really wasn't erotica.
Oh.
What was considered erotic really wasn't erotic, you know? And the only reason why I knew that is because, you know, I've been studying literature since I was an undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, when I spoke to them, it was just like, you know, this is not really erotica. Why isn't it really erotica? Because they developed an emotional connection first. You don't develop an emotional connection first in erotica. It's about the sex.
Thank you.
That's what readers are looking for.
Yes.
You know, that's why when people say, oh, well, you know, oh, I can't stand erotica because there's not much of a plot. Erotica readers don't want one.
Yeah. Who's there for the plot?
We don't want, if it says erotica, not erotic, there's a difference. But if it's like straight up erotica, all right. You better not have six chapters before they get the book.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't want to know their whole backstory.
We met then. They were looking for all of that. You know, that's not what erotica readers are looking for.
Right.
So when I started to write my romances, I started off with non-Muslim characters, first of all. The characters are who they are.
Right.
And then my first characters were not Muslim. And so, but when I started to write Muslim characters, my Muslimness is on the forefront. I showed myself this other author that wrote the erotic romance.
Mm-hmm.
She did it, you know, and rightfully so. It's not something, it's not an easy thing because people come at you.
Yeah.
People come at you. You think people come at you for writing romance? Look like me. Have a hijab on like me and be like, yeah, my male characters go down. You know, it's a hard thing. And so a lot of times they don't. They safeguard themselves.
Right.
They don't. And so, but in the, she was the only one. All the other ones shut that bedroom door and locked that bedroom door. So she was very much my inspiration. I was like, I want to write romance, but I don't want, I appreciate people who want sweeter romances.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't like calling them clean romances because there's nothing dirty about sex. So sweet romance. Okay. I can dig it. I can understand it. It's not something I necessarily want to write. I may have characters one time who are just like, yeah, nah, Layla, you ain't doing all that. Yeah, I may. You never know the characters who they are. But I just definitely, these are my characters. This is who I am.
Right.
These are my characters. This is what I write. Here's steamy scene number one. Here's steamy scene number two. You know, and I've been exploring it.
Yeah.
I've loved exploring it.
Yeah.
And I've loved exploring it with other Muslim authors because by standing my ground, so to speak, there are other authors who are writing steamier content. They're still assuaging it when they are writing their Muslim characters. So for instance, with my latest release, The Groom.
Yes.
It's one book of four in a series that's called Ramadan Nights. So it centers the holy month, which actually begins either tomorrow night or the night after. And so it's four great books, short reads. They're all novellas. And it was an opportunity to highlight the month and highlight that the way that faith and love and desire and passion fuse. And it's something that I do in my books. And so I really wanted to do it and feature and highlight the month itself, because even in the Quran, okay, Allah, God, talks about Ramadan, the purpose of Ramadan, okay, which is to have more consciousness of Him, but even the nights of Ramadan. So in the nights of Ramadan, you can go and you can do what you do.
Go and have some fun.
Go and have some fun. He knows his creation.
There
you
go.
So you can go and have some fun. So that's what I wanted to feature in my book. And other aspects of it, how it is that, you know, things happen in Ramadan. You know, you're trying to center your faith more. You're trying, you set goals for yourself, for your own personal development, emotional development, spiritual development, you know, familial development and communal development. So you set goals for yourself. So how does that play when you have a partner?
Yeah.
What are some of those things that happen? When you have a community, what are some of those things that happen? So in my book, the couple, Mansoor and Faiza, they grew up together. Okay. They grew up across the street from each other. He is Arab and she is African-American. And they grew up best friends, like tight, okay?
Right.
And then he went away, okay? His family's from Kuwait. He went away for the summer from Kuwait and came back a man. And came back a man feeling her.
Oh.
And so his mom was like, yeah, we're not having any of that. No, 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 no. Let me arrange this marriage for you real quick.
Oh.
So he married someone else. He married someone else.
Oh my God.
And he has a kid. And she married someone else. And so her husband dies and his wife leaves him. his wife leaves him with the kid. Leaves him with the kid. Okay. And I may have to write a book about her because she's not a bad person. She was going through stuff. Basically, it was an arranged marriage.
Right.
And they connected because they were both being pressured so much by their family to get married.
Right.
So they got married. So they weren't bad people.
Right.
But they were both feeling that pressure because they did not feel that way about each other.
Ugh.
All they had was that connection of being pressured and pressured into this marriage.
Yeah.
So let me just shut him up. He's a nice guy. She's a nice girl. Let's just shut him up type of thing.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't build a relationship on that. Yeah. And so she couldn't take it anymore. So she was not a bad person. She just could not take it anymore. And so I may have to write her story. She may have to get her own Ramadan nights.
Yes.
Readers are already saying that. They're already saying Zainab though. What Zainab? What about her?
What'd she get though?
What's Zainab get? You ain't leaving Zainab like that. So they Mansoor and Faiza, the two main characters, you know, now they're grown.
Yeah.
Okay. And Mansoor is like, I'm man. And I want her. You see that? All that across the street?
That's all what I want.
That's what I want. And so what happens? And like, what happens when they get together and Ramadan sets in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what are the challenges you have as a couple when Ramadan sets in and you're feeling each other and you want each other and just things are crazy? So that's what I did. And but there are other great books. There are sweet romances. You know, there is The Chance. It has a little bit more. It has some steam in it, too, by B.F. Queen. And it is a couple who are struggling. You know, he's losing his wife, Danielle. He's losing his wife. Okay, their marriage is falling apart. So he really only has one chance to get her back. You know,
that's
really. I know you gotta read these books. And there's The Note. Okay, so one girl who crushed on someone. They crushed on each other, but then they kind of drifted apart, type of thing.
Yes,
and never had the nerve to pull through on it, type of thing. So when they run cross paths again, are they gonna finally do it? Like, are you gonna have the guts to do it already?
Oh, we getting this done now?
Exactly.
Let's go.
And there's The Ideal. And that is an ex-basketball player, basketball agent or something like that. He's decided he's looking for the ideal wife. All right. So you know what a challenge that's going to be.
Yo.
Ideal person, for real. You know, and he runs across someone that's not feeling him. Yeah, all of that, I'm not impressed.
Oh, my God.
So they're great romances. Muslim authors have an opportunity, and it came through the work that I did.
Yeah.
And so I really got together with these Muslim authors, and it was just like, we now want to do something where it's just like, we want to center our faith, our experiences, our perspectives, and write great characters and write great stories that everyone can connect with.
Yeah.
Everyone can connect with, you know, someone not feeling you too much. You think you all that, and then there's someone that's telling you, nah, chief.
It's you not ain't. Working.
You ain't all that. Your marriage is falling apart and you're desperate. What do you do?
Ugh.
You know, you've been the good boy.
Yeah.
Or you've been the good girl. Okay.
Yeah.
But now you've grown and you know what you want.
Yeah.
And you're going to get it no matter who likes it or doesn't like it. Mom, dad, going to have to chill on this one.
There you go.
I got this over here. You know, so we all have that. And like all of those doubts, those desires, those frustrations and everything, we all have those things. So we wanted to really kind of center that and write about that from our cultural perspective. So it's been really, really great and exciting to be able to do that.
What types of writing styles do you make sure or like to highlight when writing a new book or thinking about a new book? Are there any like specifics that you kind of make sure to include?
Okay, well, first and foremost, I'm third person limited all the way.
Oh.
I do not write in the first person. I do not write in the second person. First of all,
Fiction
and second person don't really get along all that much. Really just literary fiction. But if you're talking about like genre fiction, romance, mystery, something like that, doesn't really get along with it. I'm sure there'll be an author somewhere down the line that does it and does it well.
There you go.
But, you know, it's just very, it's really difficult to do. First person, I think, is a great perspective, a great point of view for something like YA, where you really want to sit to the character. Or for readers, there are some readers, you know, I just had a reader who told me that they have a difficult time reading first person, third person, because first person gives you an opportunity to really create a picture of just that character.
Okay.
You know, with third person, you really can be, you center one character in a scene, but you can also, the reader can also see and feel and think the other characters by what the main character is doing.
Yeah.
So it's easier to do that in third person limited than it is to do that in first person. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of romance authors who do. And when I read their work, it's like, yeah, I'm going to tunnel right into that character and I'm going to enjoy them.
type Get of all thing. Up in it.
But I do. Ultimately, I want to center African-American female characters, brown skin.
Right.
Usually natural hair or braids, locks, something like that. I've had a character who flat ironed her hair in my second book in the Brothers-in-Law series, Sweet Love, Bitter Fruit, Tony. She flat ironed her hair. So she had like this cool bob, you know, city, New York City woman.
Yeah, fashion, woman on the go.
Going to work, you know,
there we how go. You do.
And so I usually do that. I want to center characters who ultimately have to take care of business too.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate the whole idea of the millionaire, the billionaire and everything like that. I've read a lot of those books. I still do. And I still very much enjoy them. There are certain things that a character with money can afford to do that a character without it can't. Yep. But for the most part, my characters have to go to work. So it's just like, yeah, we're going to have to pick this up later. Even my rich characters, so like even in my book, my most recent book in the Brothers-in-Law series, Building on Broken Dreams, book three, he actually comes from money. Adam Kane, he comes from money, rich Bostonian, you know, like family lineage, money stuff type of thing. He was not happy. So he converted to Islam and he opened up his own customized car shop. Which they don't, you know, they make quite a few pennies doing that. It's quite a lot of money in that.
Yep.
But it's not his father's money, okay? And so, but he has to go to work, you know? He has to love his woman, to pursue his woman, love his woman, try to protect his woman, but he also has a business to maintain.
Yeah.
You know, Simon, in my first book, you know, he loves Regina. He falls in love with Regina. He pursues her. He wants her. But ultimately, you know, I gotta go to Singapore.
My bad.
I'll be gone for 6 weeks. Oh, did I say 6 weeks? I meant 10 weeks. Oh, did I say 10 weeks? I meant 13 weeks. Sorry. But something good happens. Something good happens because he's away. There's some drama because he's away. And, you know, Marcus in my second book, you know, he runs a community center and his wife, Tony, you know, the one with the cool bob and everything. Yes. She's a psychologist. So, you know, just like, yeah, I'm mad at you, but I have clients. So I have to be mad at you, take care of business first, you know? And so they have to text each other and like that, and, you know, set up ways so that they can be together and everything.
Yeah.
My characters have to work, even though work in progress that I have, well, it's not a work in progress. I'm in the editing phase of it. The Trouble with That Sister, which is my third book in the Open and Love series. He's a shakedown guy, basically. Baz. Oh my God, I can't wait to get Baz to readers. I'm like loving Baz and Rahma so much. Baz, they're the characters in a crossover series that I have, Muslim Bad Boys.
Oh.
So these are the type of guys that will go to the mosque, pray before they go take someone out.
Oh.
Go to mosque and pray, because I'm going to make my last prayer before I go on this job, because I may not come back from it.
Oh, my God.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's a bad guy there that is just like, and what the, oh, yeah. I just cannot wait to get, like, I just cannot. This book is probably one of the ones I've been the most excited about.
Oh.
because I know people like that. That's the thing. It's like Muslims can't deny it. They don't know. They can't deny it. They know people like that. You know, right. People like that. They know people like that. So I just really wanted to highlight that imperfect Muslim that still is trying to do their best to worship their Lord and their thing at the same time.
Yup.
Doing their own thing, type of thing. So I was just like, yeah, they'll take you out. I'm gonna make sure I'm not gonna miss my prayer and I'm gonna fast during Ramadan, but I'm gonna still shake you down for this money. I cannot wait. It's just like it's a group of them of my Muslim bad boys. There's Baz, there's Nadir, who's Tunisian, there is Veer, who is Indian, and he converted. Okay, so he's Indian and he converted in prison. That's where he and Baz met, is in prison. And then there's Danish, who is the clean cut, straight laced, 9-to-5 guy that launders the money for them.
What?
Yep. Danish launders the money for them. And so Nadir's the assassin. And I can't wait for his story because his story is really cool. Veer is the muscle. Yeah. And Baz is the leader. He's the one that's the leader. And he's had it tough because he does not fit that model Asian minority. And so he is just like living his life. He falls in love with Rahma. And like he wasn't a good Muslim before he met her. And so he's trying to straighten out his life, which his partner does not like at all. Ooh. And so some stuff happens because of that. And so, yeah, he just definitely like he lived a life of his parents telling him that he was no good. When he met Rahma, he allowed himself to be vulnerable to her, but her parents don't like him either.
No. Oh, no.
Would you?
Okay, I mean, fair point, but so heartbreaking. Would
you? Now, neither of their families like the fact that they're in love with each other. They get married and they have a kid and everything, but some stuff happens, some stuff drops.
Yeah.
And so I cannot wait. Like, you know, she has to really be strong. She has to try to keep her love for him strong, but it's hard. Okay. Because she has her doubts and, you know, she has people talking in her ear. So basically the whole world is against them being together. Everybody. Ugh. For one reason or the other, does not want to see these two people together. But Baz is determined to scorch the entire world to get his Rahma. Nobody's taking her away from him.
Goodness.
At all. Unless they want to, they could try, right. They'll die.
Nope.
But they could try.
Oh,
I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah, really looking forward to it. So there's a lot of things. They say they give salams to each other. They pray. They fast. They go to the mosque. It's very much Muslim life and real life. There's real life. Just like, you know, these are who these people are. You know, a lot of people think, you know, this is the assumption that, first of all, that you somehow are perfect. I don't know how that is. Or that the faith will make you perfect. No, the purpose of the faith is for you to constantly seek to develop yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. It's like with any faith.
Exactly.
And then also that somehow if you're covered, you don't have vices. If you have a beard, you don't have vices. If you can read the Quran, you don't have vices. Yeah, you still have vices because you're human.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you're human. So I can't wait to get to them. I think most of my characters are Muslim. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have my Muslim vampire romance with Rufus.
Oh.
Yeah, I have quite a few coming down. Oh, yeah, Muslim vampire. I ain't playing.
You know what, touch all, Mom?
I touch all. I love paranormal. I love paranormal. I can't wait to write paranormal. I have a whole series of paranormal that my friend keeps on saying, when are you going to start Noble Birth? When are you going to start Noble Birth? No, I don't want a mafia romance. When are you going to start this paranormal romance series? I'm like, it's coming. It's happening. I have all my work in progress, everything. But that's what happens when you're an author. You have these stories in your head and you want to get them out. And I think the beauty of where we are today as authors is that we really have an opportunity to do it in ways that we haven't had for centuries.
Yes.
And so, you know, independent publishing, I'm an independent published author by choice, because I did have publishers that were willing to pick up my way to you. And I decided that I wanted to do it myself. Learned a lot of lessons. But independent authors get to do that. You get to get your stories to readers. And that's especially important for Black people and people of color. Because when you think about traditional publishing, the big five, literary agents, you know, that's saturated with whiteness.
Yeah.
It's saturated with whiteness. And so when you want to come with that new thing, you know, first of all, publishers are wondering what's going to sell. And literary agents are wondering what can they sell to publishers and get a commission off your royalties. I'm just saying. That's what they're thinking about. They're thinking about white readers. That's the majority of readers.
Yeah.
Well, who else would you think about? Who else would you think about but the majority of readers?
Right.
And so a lot of times, two things occur. And people don't get mad at me, but I've said this before. Two things occur. Either you are a POC author and you decide that this is the venue you want to go through. You want to go down. You want to go traditional publish. I'm mad at you. Go ahead. Do you.
Right.
There may be compromises that you have to make when it comes to your work. There definitely may be compromises that you have to make. And a publisher may, if you are a Muslim publisher, you're writing a book and the characters are all Black Muslims. They may decide, yeah, Black Muslims aren't going to sell. Make them Arab. Make them. Why can't you make them from Egypt instead?
Oh, no, yeah. No.
Yeah, if you want to write, if you're a Black person or if you're Desi and you want to write this really kick butt Desi superhero type of magical character in your fantasy novel type of thing, and they're the strongest ones and they're the ones leading the pack and everything like that, you know, instead of the phenotypical white male trope. Okay, well, we don't think that's going to sell because, you know, like Asian men aren't seen as strong like that. So we don't think that's going to sell. Write it and publish it yourself, because you will have readers that are like, oh my God, I love it. Oh my God, I love him. Oh my God, I love her. Oh my God, I loved it. I loved it all. I loved it all. That's one of the things that I've been getting a lot of. There are Muslim romance readers. There are Muslim romance readers who get to see themselves.
Yes.
There are Black Muslim romance readers who get to see themselves, who get to see their deen, who get to see the lives that they live, who get to see the way that they fall in love in the pages of the book. You know, in Building on Broken Dreams, you know, you go through courtship. A lot of Muslims go through courtship. That's the venue, that's the way that they decide. So there's no touching, let alone kissing and other stuff. So what happens during that courtship? When you're getting to know that person and you're getting closer and closer to that person, you become very hypersensitive to everything.
Everything.
Everything, you know? And so in one scene I have where Adam, the male protagonist, he's been waiting for 4 weeks, okay? Which is long enough for him as far as he's concerned to get married to her. And, so he makes a special blend of coffee. He bought her a thermos as a gift because she loves to drink coffee all day like him. And he goes to her job, which is in a bookstore, and he gives it to her. And he is just going crazy because she's sipping it and she's licking her lips and everything like that. And he takes the thermos and he takes a drink and he drinks exactly where her lips were type of thing. And he's just like, yeah, I had enough. Let's get married this weekend.
So it's happening now. Let's go right now.
Then you know why. Now you know why that brother is like, yeah, let's do it now.
Oh my gosh.
You get to see those things. And I think that that's great. And this is the reason why it's like, I want to see a Pakistani female love interest. I want to see a Pakistani writer write that.
Yeah.
I want to see you write that right then. I want to see it. I want to read it and be like, oh.
Right. I want to feel the emotions and be there.
Feel the emotion and everything like that. I'm quite sure it probably exists in Pakistan. Let's have some of that over here now.
Right.
You know, like that type of thing, because there's a rich culture. Oh, there's a rich culture of sensual romance in Muslim culture historically. Yeah. You know, the Turks and the Egyptians, they didn't play when it came to that. But across the board, there is erotica.
Yeah.
There's erotic romance. There is a rich culture of it. But somehow we got stunted along the way.
Yeah.
You know, and well, I know as an African-American, I know what happened. You know, a bunch of people stole my people. So we lost everything, our faith, everything, let alone the literature. But, you know, we're recreating it now from this perspective now. From this side of the Atlantic now. So it's just like, I want to see more. I want to see, you know, the authors of the Ramadan Nights series are all Black Muslim romance authors.
Yeah.
All Black Muslim romance authors. Because it's try as hard as I may. And I try to encourage them as much as possible.
Yeah.
It's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cultural backlash that's at stake. You know, I did see, oh my God, I forgot her name and the title of her book. Ugh. There was one author who, Desi author, South Asian author, who wrote a queer YA. And I was like, ooh. All right, girl, what we got going on?
Let's see.
Let's see what you've written. I don't usually read that much YA, but oh. Let me
I'm here for this.
Let me put this in my Kindle right quick.
Oh, you know,
because I need this. I'm so interested in this. You can't believe. And it's just like, so that's one of the things. The other thing is like, I had one reader say, actually a couple of them say, you know, you write more women's fiction than you do romance. I was like, no, it's romance. It's just romance with depth.
There you go.
You know, and it's I write romances substance. That are not so deep. I write romances where it's just like, it's just about that couple getting together and that's it.
There you go.
That's all I want them to say. Like in my book, Stroke at Midnight, that's what it was about. Mateo wanted her. I want Deja. I've been looking at Deja for too long. I sat back when my little brother was interested in her, but now he's gone and we've been doing this and now I'm gonna do her. That's what this entire story was about.
Whew, got real hot real quick.
That's what the entire story was about. That's what the groom is about. I mean, it has the Ramadan aspects of it, the cultural aspects of it.
Right.
But it's about, I want her. That's what I want. I want her. I want Pfizer. That's what I want. Let me get her this because she likes this. I remember when we were kids.
Within your Ramadan Nights series, I know you collaborated with some other authors. When you are thinking about collaborating with other authors, are there any or are there ever any stipulations when working with someone?
Well, it depends because this is my second author series that I've been a part of.
Okay.
And I'm actually working right now with another in a collection, Mafia collection. I cannot wait. Oh my God. Savage Bloodline. I feel so honored that they that I was allowed into this collection because there's some really great interracial romance writers. Simon Allen, Kenya Wright, Kata Kendrick, L. Lauren. It's just like a whole laundry list. I'm like, me?
You want me in there? Oh my God, little me? Yes.
And so, but it is a very different experience than the other series. First of all, I'm the one that managed the Ramadan Night series. So there were certain things, and I'd already worked with these authors on a previous series. So I was very much down with working with them again. So it actually flowed pretty well. And it was pretty easy because it wasn't new authors I didn't really know or anything like that. If it's authors that you don't know, it's probably a lot more stringent. Love and Lust at Lockdown, it was the same way. I was invited to it and I wrote my book. And I kept the manager in abreast of exactly what I was writing about type of thing. And then I released the book. And so the same here, you know, with Ramadan Nights, we're constantly in contact with each other. With Savage Bloodline, you're still constantly in contact with each other, but there are very specific rules and everything like that. So there, because it centers a family, it's a mafia family. Oh. So every book is a male protagonist from that family.
Oh, dang.
Okay. And so there's an entire complex family tree that you have to add your character to. You have to be aware of what is going on with the other characters in the other book, especially the main ones up top. The Dom himself, Enzo. Enzo is his nickname, Lorenzo De Luca. And his immediate family, and so what's going on there? So there's a lot of things that are happening, a lot of timelines, a lot of everything. You got to keep abreast of even the cover itself, which they are phenomenal. Can't talk too much about them because they haven't been released yet.
Little hush hush.
But very specific. The covers are very, very specific. Ooh. Just like with the Ramadan Nights, like there's a common theme on those covers, you know. And so it depends. Like we wanted a common theme. And so we did that. That's what we did. We did a very simplistic thing and like very sleek. We wanted it very sleek and really to like center like the brightness and the moon and everything like that, because that's like that. So we collaborated on that as well. And so then we released the series. And I think maybe more Ramadan Nights down the line, because I think I'm going to end up giving Zaynab her story. And I'm probably, if I know, with those other books, you know, the authors wrote some pretty dynamic characters too. So there are at least one or two secondary characters that I can see them making a book out of, readers wanting them to make a book out of. When your readers say to you, well, what about this character? When they going to get their book? I guess I have to write your book. The character starts talking to you. Yeah, right. What I'm going to give up? Yeah, right. Why are you going to just leave me here, sitting up here, just all by myself?
Right. Where's my Ramadan night?
Right. My ex and his and my kid are living there happily ever after. I want mine.
Where's mine? Give me mine.
Which is going to be strange because she's not Black.
She's not.
She's Arab. So I have to be really careful. If I write her, I want to be really, really careful about how I write her.
Yeah.
And not step in too far into the culture, because it's not mine. It's not my culture. So I can't step too deeply into the culture type of
thing. Right. Right. Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm very excited to write them too. There's a lot coming down the pike. I have at least, hopefully it's three. I'm trying to be ambitious. Four more releases this year. Yeah. Well, I got to get the rest of the brothers-in-laws out.
I know.
I got the Timeless Romance, which is my first delve into sci-fi.
Yes, I am so excited.
Yeah, so much world building and sci-fi.
I can't even explain to you guys. She was telling me a little bit about it when we first met. It is literally phenomenal. Think of the Netflix show, the one that's called One, where you find like your
which one. Which I never heard of until you mentioned. So just
her book literally blows that up to a million.
I never heard of it until you mentioned. I just really wanted to. You know, the trope that it's part of a series with other authors. Okay, and it's AMBW, Asian Man, Black Woman, and the running theme trope is fated mates. Okay, which is which romance, you know, fandom really likes. You know, there is definitely a readership for fated mates, and especially usually it's definitely going to be sci-fi or paranormal that you're going to find that fated mates. Not going to really find it in contemporary romance. It has to be sci-fi, fantasy, paranormal, something like that. And so this is sci-fi. I'm making most of the other authors so far have been fantasy. Okay, I went the sci-fi route. I went post-apocalyptic, okay? And so I wanted to do my own take on the fated mates trope.
Guys, it's so good. So it's so good. Yeah. It's not even finished, and I already know it's going to be a winner.
I'm hoping so. There's a lot of world building. But I guess then that's why, you know, a lot of times those are the genres that have the most fandom, is when you have, like, you've built this world, this very intricate world. There's a political side, there's a social side, these characters and everything like that who are new and interesting, who are often a divergence in many ways from the life that the reader's living.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably why you have it so much. You know, like, no one's going to dress up like Tony Kent, because that's just getting dressed for the day.
There you go.
They may pair her a ship to, what is, you know, that would be crazy, like fan fiction where they ship Marcus and Phoebe, who's been running after him the whole book. But he's in love with Tony. So, you know, it's a lot of work. I've always had respect for sci-fi fantasy and paranormal writers, always had, because I avoided it for a long time because I knew there was so much world building involved, and I know it could be done badly.
Yeah.
To be honest, I know it could be done badly. You know, you can lop off things and really, you know, readers are looking for stuff. Those are the only long books that I usually read. It has to be like something like a sci-fi or a fantasy. Oh. Sci-fi fantasy are the only long books I'll read, because I know that they involve so much world building.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. 350, 400 pages. Okay. Oh. 450. Let me hear. But all right.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know they go higher. Yeah. I know they go higher.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're going 1,000 pages. I know. I've had the torture of the Lord of the Rings and all of that stuff. And I know, but there's so much world building. But I'm usually, tell me a story in 350 words. Pages. Sorry. 300. Tell me a story in 350 pages. If you can't tell me your story in 350 pages, I'm really not interested. I want to go on to the next book. I'm ready to go to the next book. And I've written longer books. I've written books longer than 350 pages. No, daggone well, you know, if you run across a reader like yourself, she probably will not pick this book. But sci-fi fantasy, I'll be like, okay, sci-fi fantasy, 500 pages. All right.
Let's go. Let's sit down. Let me read a
few pages first and see. So what happens is, if the first chapter grabs me, I'll keep reading it.
I get you. Yeah.
All right. And I'll look and I'll be grumbling. Did they really have to have 500? Oh, wait a second. Did they really have to have 500? Oh, wait. Hold up. No. Okay, no. Just order pizza. Hold on.
I have a friend who, she will read the first chapter and then she'll go to page 100 and read that page. And she always says that, like, if the first chapter doesn't grab her, then she'll go to page 100. And if it connects enough to make her want to know what's in between, then she'll read it.
Ooh, that's a good idea, because it may be a slow burn.
Right. And I'm always just baffled when she, like, talks to me about a new book. And she's like, yeah, the beginning's not that great and it's really slow and I don't understand who the characters are. But I got to chapter 100, or I got to page 100. And things are popping off.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's like, I got to know what's happening. Why is this happening? And I think that's so cool that she does that.
Well, you know, it's funny, because for a lot of avid readers, they don't mind a slow burn. And
right.
That's why it's just like, sometimes the advice is like, you know, like, have that first sentence really, really, really pop. No, it doesn't have to pop so much as it has to draw you in.
Exactly.
The book.
It needs to be alluring enough.
It has to be alluring enough, and that it draws you in. That character draw. That's why the character in the first chapter is so extremely important.
So important.
Because they're the ones that are going to start to pull you. Oh, what's happening here? Let's see. If they haven't pulled you in, for me, if they haven't pulled me in by the first chapter, I'm like, oh God. If I see stereotypes jumping off the bat, I'm not reading it.
No.
Not doing it. It's just like, okay, I've done that to a lot of books.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of books by nice authors too. By nice authors. I have, and it's just like, I can't. You know what it is? I am 50 years old. And I really don't have the time, energy, or inclination to continue to be exposed to the very thing that has had a negative impact on my life. This is me living vicariously through characters.
Yeah.
I don't have to experience stereotypes, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, if you're a white author, please don't write a sassy black female character. Just saying. If you're a non-Muslim author, please don't write an oppressed, scared, timid Muslim woman.
Yeah.
Please don't.
Don't do
please
it.
Please don't. Oh, wait, I got to do my old people. If you're a black author, please don't write the Asian character who can't speak English and don't like black people that owns a store. Please don't. Please. And I almost did something like that. I almost made Simon's mother in my first book. Like the Asian, that typical Asian woman who is first generation and doesn't like Regina because she's black and speaks broken English and everything like that. And my colleague at the college, who's Asian, is Asian American, she was like, no, don't do that.
Not that way.
Nah, you're not gonna do that. Nah. You're not gonna do that. I'm like, what? She's like, no, Layla, no.
no, happening.
Learn to expand. I'm like, I just had to sit down. I'm like, you know, I'm writing other people from other cultures. I need to really know what the heck I'm doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I really. So it's just like, can there be sassy black characters? Yeah. Can there be angry black female characters? Yes. Let a black woman author writer.
There you go.
Because what she's going to do is she's going to give that character nuance, and it won't be just what you usually see, but you'll learn all of the crap that got her to that point in the first place.
Exactly.
All the stuff that got her to that point in the first place. Don't write the obviously rebellious Asian American woman. Let an Asian American woman write that, okay? Especially a South Asian American woman. You know, there's a reason why she got to that point. So let an author from that perspective give you the breadcrumbs to understand why it is right now she's doing what she's doing right there at that point in that second. Mm-hmm. Right now, she's not getting what you're getting right now at that second. Get that. Let them do that.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. There's certain things about characters that you need, that if you're outside of that culture, you need to just leave alone, even if it is what you see. Mm-hmm. Because it is what you see, because you're part of this society that feeds us off of stereotypes of other people. That's the only way they can keep us separated, is to dehumanize us through the stereotypes.
Yeah.
That's what they got to do. So don't do it. Stay in your lane.
Have you yourself ever felt a disconnect within the Muslim author field?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, you know, a lot of the other work that I do as I collaborate with authors, we just had a fabulous online conference for a month. We have conferences centering Black Muslim authors, Black BMA Con. that Citrus Black was some authorship, and it's part of the work that I do that from back in my college days. And so, yeah, definitely am cheerleaders of Muslim authors, period. All authors. I'm a cheerleader of authors, especially indie authors. Like, I love my indie authors. And they do not reciprocate. Muslim authors do not, for the most part, do not reciprocate. Considering how much of the collaborative work that I've done, considering how much of the signal boosting promotion and cheerleading that I've done for Muslim authors, no, because they don't want to because of what I write. They're uncomfortable with it. They know that their readership is uncomfortable with it. And so they don't do it. There's a couple of authors who, although they will not write what the way that I write, so they will not have the same content that I have. And they have very much, they write very much Muslim-centered books. And you look at their blog and their Facebook and everything like that. It's like Islamic fiction, Muslim fiction, Muslim fiction, Muslim fiction, Muslim fiction, this, that, that.
Right.
There's one author who actually puts everything that I write up, whether it centers Muslim characters or not. My covers, okay, don't scare them. One author, they put them up on their blog and everything like that. They just did my BDSM. I didn't think that would see like a day among Muslim authors. Yeah. I didn't expect it to. And, you know, Muslim romance authors, yes. But some of them, yes. But Muslim authors writing outside of the genre, absolutely not. Wow. Absolutely not. And they did. And I got all teary-eyed because I was like, they put up a stroke in my night too.
You really like me.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I'm just going to be honest about it. No, they don't. They don't. You know, I've built a pretty decent social media following.
Definitely.
And a readership. My readership is always growing.
Yeah.
And it includes Muslims, but Muslim authors don't. They won't promote my stuff. They don't even promote my Muslim stuff. They don't even promote my Muslim stuff with Muslim women covered on the cover. Because I got fabulous covers with Muslim women covered. Like, I'm not doing that just show the back of the head thing. Like, I got pictures where they look good, good. It's like, all right, girl.
There you go.
And he's looking at her like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, but they don't. They won't put me up. They won't, you know, I just was recently a part of a group reading. I specifically asked them, I said, how skinny do you want it? And they, you know, they had all this bravado about, yeah, just bring it, bring it, bring it, bring it. I'm like, are you sure? You
don't have to tell me twice.
Okay. And so I did.
You brought it.
They recorded this. It was me and a bunch of other authors. They didn't put my recording up.
And yet they were the ones asking for you to bring it, and you brought it. And then they censored you.
Because the genre scares a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about the romance genre. There's some really deep, complicated, complex writing in that genre. And there's some characters that, you know, there's a reason why a lot of times they're series. There's a reason why a lot of times series, because the authors create such complex characters. So there's a reason why. And it focuses on something that is essential to us as people.
It's humans.
Humans falling in love. So and getting together and being together, you know, intimately. So it does scare a lot of people. And I know it, but I'm okay with that. All right. Because I do get a lot of support from non-Muslim authors, you know, who very much appreciate my work, and readers in general, Muslim and non-Muslim readers. I have a growing following among Muslim and non-Muslim readers who want to see themselves. Some non-Muslim readers want to learn, like if I write a Muslim romance, want to learn more, see it from that perspective, like romance from that perspective, and they've liked it. I've gotten readers just because of that, because they're like, Muslims getting busy. Wait a second now.
Let's get in this.
And so I wish there was more support, but you know, there is. You probably receive pushback, because I receive pushback all the time, and some authors, they don't want that smoke. They don't want that smoke. They receive enough pushback for writing fiction itself in Muslim culture, believe it or not. If it's not a children's book, a lot of people in American Muslim culture will say, what's the point of writing this book? Despite the fact that the creator is a storyteller.
Good
the
Quran God. Is
full of stories. They're true stories. They're not fiction. But right. Still full of stories. The wow. Prophet Muhammad told stories. That's how he taught people a lot of times. Tell stories about this. There was a woman. It was a prostitute and a dog. And she got into heaven because she gave that dog water. You know, that's a story. You know, so it's just like, it's true, but it's still a story. So it's like this whole thing, this whole idea of storytelling in American Muslim culture, for the most part, you know, a lot of Muslim authors have to push back against that. It's opening up more. It isn't like it was 10 years ago, but it still happens. So they have to get their own smoke. And so they don't want the added smoke of now you're writing sexual scenes. I mean, I've actually had people like mad at me. You're going into people's bedrooms. I'm like, you realize that they're figments of my imagination.
Exactly.
Right? Not real. They're not. That's how uncomfortable some people are with sex. And it's not just Muslims. It's
not no, just no.
Society. But, you know, like we're talking about Muslim culture, American Muslim culture. That's how uncomfortable sex is in American Muslim culture. Like, honestly. And so, but that's one of the reasons why I write what I write, mm-hmm. because I want to show those depictions. I want to show Muslim characters being sensual and intimate with each other and going down on each other and loving to feel each other and loving the way each other feels and arousing each other and getting pleasure out of arousing each other. I want to show that. And so I do. And so that makes some people very, very uncomfortable and makes some people pleased because that's what they want to see. But it'll make people uncomfortable. I have readers that are like, I have to wait till my husband. Oh, your new book came out. I got it. I'm going to wait till my husband's out of town. Wait till he gets home. So men, you're welcome.
I love it.
You know, there's so much about sex that is kept like clenched and like you can't discuss it. You can't talk about it. And I was like, no, man. What about BDSM? I have couples. I have one of the brothers-in-law, you know, he has two wives. He has toy boxes for both of them.
There you go.
You know, why not? Why not discuss that? Talk about that. Because these are inclinations that people have. Just because you're Muslim doesn't mean that you do not have them.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you don't have them. So why not show characters navigating that? You know, and why not show how closely Islamic BDSM can be? Because there's so much responsibility that's attached to it. You're not supposed to injure anybody, you're not supposed to
mark
anybody, but you're still arousing your partner. I mean, the whole idea of the whole position of the dominant and just like that responsibility that they have, you know, it's just like, come on, dude, why can't we show this in a Muslim context? Are you kidding me? You know, I'd rather do that than someone just run around and make all of these mistakes.
Yeah. Also, I feel like I have a big issue with a major topic that's going on within education about like, when do we talk about sex education in school? And I feel like that is a lot of how I feel about like erotic books and romance books is like, when are people going to be comfortable enough to read erotic books? Because we all know it's happening, we all know it's there, and the fact that people are so closed off to even having the opportunity about reading about it and being so uncomfortable with the act happening to these fictional characters, it's so mind-blowing to me. Because it's things that personally I feel should be talked about and need to be talked about.
Well, we live in a post-colonial puritanical society.
Yeah.
You know, we are colonized people, enslaved people. Okay, because my people were not in colonized; they were stolen and enslaved. And we've had this mindset when it comes to sex, sexuality, intimacy, gender roles, skin color, all kinds of things impressed upon us. So in cultures that may have had certain positions when it comes to sex and intimacy, it got flipped, it got switched, it got changed. So it's just like, you know, people don't talk about it. They're not supposed to talk about it. And especially if you're a product of something like chattel slavery, yeah, that's a very difficult thing. When you think about what happens to sexual dialogue, when you're forced to have sex with someone in order to procreate,
yeah,
create something, a child that who will be seen as property, cargo, chattel. That takes on a whole new dynamic, and it's going to change it's going to cause cultural shifts when it comes to intimacy, when it comes to sex. So when you're talking about what happens when you come from a colonized society where your families are broken up, the men are all sent away. Okay, what happens then? There's going to be cultural shifts. You know, so that's where we live. We've been impacted by Puritanism, Victorianism. And so peoples across the globe, ethnicities across the globe, races across the globe have had major shifts when it comes to sexual dialogue and to intimacy, you know. And even, I mean, when you think about the interpretation of the intimate dialogue between married partners in Islam, you know, it's been completely tainted and skewed. It's been completely tainted and skewed where it's become very androcentric, and it's become very much that the woman not only is supposed to capitulate every single time, she doesn't have any agency at all, you know? So that's, which is so anti-ethical to the teachings of the faith. Like, so anti-ethical. But also that she's not supposed to have libido. So you don't have to satisfy her. You know? You don't have to satisfy her at all. You know? There's a really, really good Islamic erotologist. His name is Habiba Kande. And he's written books about it. But he gets messages all the time from men. Because he talks about it and everything like that. He tries to teach Muslim men in particular. And he gets pushback all the time. He gets messages all the time. Why are you talking about this? Women don't like sex. They don't like having sex with you.
Did you ever think it might be you?
No, men are not taught to think. Men, period, are not taught to think that it might be them. Men, period, are not taught to think.
Oh my God.
Muslim, Catholic, Jewish, Presbyterian, Mormon, Hindu. It don't matter. They all are taught the same thing, you know, because of the dominant sexist society, that culture that impresses on them. That, you know, you don't have to be that great at sex. You don't have to worry about satisfying her. She always wants it. And if she doesn't want it, make sure that she does. And so then you end up with all of this stuff going on. It's across the board. It's across the board. Yeah, I mean, just look at the majority of romances written by men.
Yeah.
And you'll get a clue.
Yeah.
Just look at the majority of romances written by men. You'll definitely get a clue. So yeah, we definitely need to have these conversations. We need to have it. We need to have cultural depictions of it. So we need to have conversations familiarly, intimately, familiarly, communally, societally. We need to have nonfiction works that talk about it so that we can learn about it. We need to have fiction that'll help stimulate us to want to know more about it and everything like that. Because honestly, there have been studies. Erotic content raises libido.
Yes.
Erotic content raises libido. So it's just like, you know, what's wrong with reading something and then I'm going to want you. You know, I mean, yes, can it go down roads that people may not want to go? Oh, yeah, it can.
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely can.
And it will.
It absolutely can. But does that mean you shut everything down? Why? Why? We're sensual human beings. Why are you shutting that down? Now, if it's not for you, then it's not for you.
Exactly. That's fine.
Close the book, walk away, and call it a day.
There you go.
But what's the hate?
Yeah. Why do you feel the need to then overtly express how much you dislike it? And it might not even be that you dislike it. It's just not something that you're interested in, and it's not something for you. So then there's no need to get upset at the author for writing it, because
I get plenty of 1-star, 2-star ratings. Because they don't like the sensual scenes. Because they don't like sensual. Well, I've gotten 1 3-star because she was like, there was not enough heat in this book. This is not your usual thing.
Oh, this is not my standard. Let's heat it up a bit.
Listen, that's what pen names are for. Because if I write a Lindell Williams book, I have Lindell Williams readers who are looking for Lindell Williams things. So they're going to be looking for social commentary. So there's going to very, very much, the society is going to impact some part of these people getting together. There's going to be, based in a certain reality. So they have to go to work. They have to deal with certain things. Things happen all the time and everything like that. Yeah. And they want the heat. They want the steam. And because I want it too. That's why I write it. So I want it too. So that's why I write it. So, you know, they will be like, yeah, what happened?
Where that though?
What happened? But I did ask it. It wasn't enough.
You want more.
You had in the last book, you had her on all fours, and he was and the thicker bees were bouncing off the headboard.
Where's that intensity? That's what I want every time.
Where's that energy?
Oh my god, I love it.
Where's that energy? Keep that energy. Don't be doing this. What is this right here? What is that? You know, but that's what pen names are for. If I ever decide to write a sweet romance, it will never be a Lindell Williams sweet romance because my readers will slaughter me. Rightfully so. I clicked your book and I expect some steam and you just shut that bedroom door on me. No, we got to talk.
Oh, I love it. Oh my God, I love it so much. So in the art of fandoms, what are some fandoms that you are currently that you are currently into right now or that you would consider yourself to be a part of?
I don't know because like I watch stuff and I read stuff.
Uh-huh.
But that's about it. I don't do the creative aspect of it. I just really, really don't at this point. Like I'm one of those people, like, I see all of this wonderful stuff going on, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't have that talent. Like, I'm a good writer. No, don't get me wrong. I'm a really good writer. I'm a really good writer. But maybe one day I'll do some fan fiction, but I got my own stories right now. But when I look at, you know, I can't draw anything to save my life. I can make costumes and stuff like that, but I just look at this creativity. I'm like, I can't think out along those lines. I can't think. I can't like these the people in fandom, they have more creativity than, oh my God, I can't, I'm always amazed by it.
Same.
I'm always truly amazed by it. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. And I don't know that much. So I'm definitely one of those people who, if I get into a series, I definitely become a really much a fan of that series. And I'll watch it over and over and over and over again. Like I've been watching Attack on Titan. I'm like, now I got to go back again. And now, oh, let me go on to YouTube. And I got to watch on the YouTube because I got to really understand. Okay. And then it was like, oh, all the mangas are on Kindle Unlimited. Hun, what are you doing? Nothing. It is like, oh, the difference between the anime and the manga.
Oh, don't even get me started.
That beast mode that they gave Eren. Why? You know? Okay, he had two titans. He had two titans. And then he had his boy have a titan. Dang, I always forget the little bomb boy. I always forget his name. And then he has Mikasa. All right. And Levi. What else does he need? He can take them all down. He can take them all down. Even his brother Zeke. He can take them all down. Why he need be? Why you had to add that in? You know? So it's just like, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I will get sucked in. Like, yeah. I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I like Deadpool. That's about all of Marvel. I never even gotten that deep. I like Black Panther, the movie. I like the movie. It was fun like that and everything like that. But the character itself, the Black Panther series and stuff like that, it's good. No, don't get me wrong. It's good. My son absolutely loves it. But I'm just like, I can't get that deep into it. I get so deep into Black Panther. I can't. I need something a little different. And so then I started watching things like Demon Slayer and, you know, stuff like that. Demon Slayer is so good.
Good.
That's so good. So I'm just like that. I like that kind of anime. Like
yeah.
I think I'm going to watch, was it Alchemy? Alchemist Brothers? Alchemist Brothers or something like that?
Maybe.
And something with alchemy. I need to ask my son, Alchemist Brothers. Oh. But there's other ones that I'm not particularly a fan of, like One Piece. Like, I really couldn't really get into that too much. It's not really my thing. And there was one with Vikings that my son likes. And I was just like,
oh, I haven't heard of that one yet.
I can't remember the name of it. It was something with Vikings in it. And so I was just like, yeah, but that's not my thing now.
Yeah.
That's not my thing. And my daughter is a cosplayer. She's the only cosplayer out of all of us. She's the only cosplayer out of all of us. So she hasn't done it in a while because of school, but she used to do that. And she goes to Comic-Con and stuff like that. I love watching cosplayers though.
Oh, yes.
Can you be a fandom of cosplay?
Totally. Totally. I can get lost in YouTube videos and TikToks of cosplayers creating their looks.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it is so nice to just watch them work and create beautiful pieces. Oh.
Oh, they do. It's just amazing. It's just amazing what it is that they can do.
Yeah.
I love it. I love to watch, like, on TikTok, like, the artists.
Yes.
And everything like that. So that's the part of fandom I'm in. I'm an appreciative watcher.
Of course.
That's what I am. Watch everything. I'm an observer. I observe all of this phenomenal stuff that everyone is doing in fandom because it is really amazing. It really is. And I think that anyone who has a cosplayer or something, they need to support that cosplayer.
Support your
cosplayer.
Yeah.
All right. And if anyone is a fan of a cosplayer on social media or anything like that, and they get a PLC cosplayer and they get some hate, drag that person. Drag the person. Support them because they really, and I'm sorry, I think they all look great. When you see, oh my God, yeah, you say, I remember, oh my God, that's what one cosplay she did, like Black Sailor Moon.
She was gorgeous,
absolutely gorgeous. And I just, it was like, and then in the comments, such as Sailor Moon, not black, Sailor Moon, not black, yeah, she's not white either.
Thank you.
And then it was just like, oh, she's gonna be black today.
There we go. Today she's black.
Today she's black because she's me. That's what I am. You know, so yeah, that's where I am. I love seeing that. I really, really do. And that's why I'm in fandom.
Where can our listeners find you?
Okay. I am Layla Writes Love everywhere. So I am on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, all of it's at Layla Writes Love. They can find me. And my blog is www.laylawriteslove.com. And you can keep up with all of the great stuff that I have going on. I have a lot of stories to tell readers, and I can't wait to get them out to them.
She does some absolutely incredible, incredible, incredible work. Her novels are absolutely phenomenal. I've already purchased two of the books, and they're being sent to me now, which I am super excited, and I cannot wait to read them, and then I'll show them all over my Instagram. I am awesome. So excited.
I can't wait to get your feedback and tell me what you think.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. It has been an absolute joy getting to know you and getting to talk with you more about your background and being an author, and just getting the opportunity to talk to other authors has been so beneficial for me. And to me, you are such a positive light within the literary world that it has just been, it has been amazing to have you here with me today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on here, because I just really think this is an incredible platform. I really, really do.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for listening to my very first podcast. Let's Talk Fandoms is produced by Tazita Gant, created by Tazita Gant, edited by Tazita Gant, hosted by Tazita Gant, cover art done by Psych Arelic on Instagram, intro music done by Riri Retro, also on Instagram. You can find all of their links in the description of this podcast on each episode. Remember to keep talking fandoms with us, along with everyone else you know. You can find Let's Talk Fandoms podcast on Instagram and Fandoms podcast on Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and any other place you are able.